sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, it's time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair and enjoy another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll head out west for some adventure with Jimmy Stewart in The Six Shooter. But first, it's The Whistler with Harvest of Death. The Whistler was big league radio, with echoing footsteps and a haunting whistle. A new man of mystery followed onto the CBS network in 1942. The whistle, 13 notes, destined to become one of the all-time lingering melodies of old-time radio. In the melodramatic early years, The Whistler was written and produced by J. Donald Wilson. The Whistler served up generous portions of ironic commentary with the stories. The tales were full of twists and surprises. Usually, they contained a fine double twist at the end. Despite some memorable nature of its format, the program had a rather spotty record on the air. For most of the run, it was heard only regionally, billed over the Western CBS network through the mid-1940s as the Pacific Coast's leading mystery program. The Whistler was played through most of the run by Bill Foreman. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with The Whistler and The Harvest of Death from November of 1945. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Signal Oil Company and your neighborhood signal dealer bring you another curious story by The Whistler. Tonight, Harvest of Death.
I am The Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. It wasn't a large farm, but it wasn't small either. It kept two strong men busy from sunup to sundown taking care of it. And they did a nice job because the farm prospered. Mort Grant owned the farm and lived in an awkward-looking unpainted farmhouse with his wife Nellie. Jim Hayward was the hire man and lived in a spare bedroom. But actually, he'd been there so long that he was more like one of the family than a hired hand. And that's what worried Mort Sanders.
Mort! Scared me half to death popping in the kitchen door like that.
Did I?
You certainly did. You know, I'm nervous enough without you acting like a cat chasing a mouse. I've gone and broke one of my best dishes.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Mort.
And ambitious, aren't you?
Well, I surely wish that you were a little more ambitious around the house. I could use a little help now and then.
A woman's work is left to the women. Men have enough to do with their own work. Is that right, Jim?
Well, I guess it is, Mort, but Nellie looked a little tired, and I thought it wouldn't hurt anything if I stepped out in the kitchen and helped her a mite with the dishes.
You should rest quiet a while after eating supper.
I'd like to see the day when I get any rest after supper.
I'm not really tired, Mort. I don't mind helping out a little extra bit.
Well, if you don't mind, be as foolish as you want, I guess.
Nobody's being foolish. I think it's downright generous of Jim to want to help. We ought to help each other more around here instead of living like three hermits.
I don't see you out plowing. Come on, Jim. Leave the old lady to her work.
If you don't mind, Mort, I'd just soon finish what I started.
No, I don't mind, Jim. Not at all. Suit yourself. Suit yourself.
Well, as I was saying, Mr. Hawley, the postman, calls Jim, and Jim comes striding down from the chicken coop. And Mr. Hawley tells him the good news. He'd think he'd had the baby instead of his wife. Well, then he gives Jim a cigar, and you know what Jim says?
I couldn't guess.
Well, he says, seeing as how you're the mailman, I suppose your baby comes special delivery. Can you tie that? Well, don't you get it? Special delivery. Well, that's Jim.
Doesn't sound very funny to me.
Huh. If you'd said it first, you would have thought it was funny.
Maybe so. But if I said it, you wouldn't have thought it was so funny.
Mort Sanders, if I hadn't been married to you all these years, I'd think you was jealous.
I'm not jealous. But you do seem to enjoy Jim's company to mine. I'm only your husband. All I hear from you is Jim did this, or Jim said that, or Jim says and does the funniest things. Why don't you pay attention to me once in a while?
Oh, Mort.
I'm running this farm, and I'm tired of hearing what Jim does. Will you do me a favor and talk about something else?
You shouldn't get so angry, Mort, because anger leads to all kinds of human excesses. You might even do something you'd be sorry for later. And regret isn't worth the time you take to indulge in it, because it's always too late. Of course, if you try to get along with Nellie a little better, you wouldn't have to worry about Jim. But you can't see that, can you, Mort? So at supper time, you're the same old Mort, suspicious and foolish.
Supper ready?
Not for a few minutes yet. Jim won't be in for a while. He's working on the tractor.
Well, if he can't make supper on time, that's his tough luck. Well,
just the same, it isn't ready, so you'll have to wait. Well, don't you notice anything different?
No.
Well, look around.
Still don't see anything. What's it all about?
Well, if it had teeth, it'd bite you. Over there in the corner.
Bookcase. Where'd you pick up that thing?
Kind of small, and it doesn't have any books in it yet. But it is pretty, isn't it?
I don't know. Where'd you get it?
Nice red color.
I ask you where you got it.
Well, for goodness sake, stop shouting. I can hear you. Jim made it.
What'd he do that for?
Well, how do I know what he did it for? I guess maybe he heard me say once that I wished I had a bookcase and thought it'd be a nice thing for him to make one for me.
Oh, he did he? How much further is he going to go with this sort of thing? He acts as if he was your husband instead of me.
Well, Lord knows you never buy anything for me. Pinching every penny.
What I do with my money is my business.
Oh, now, Mort, don't get your blood up.
Why shouldn't I get my blood up? You seem to be interested in Jim more than anything else around here, even me. Every time I turn around, you're chatting with him over in a corner, or he's helping you with the dishes, or you're taking a fancy ride together into town. And if that ain't enough, every time you open your mouth, Jim pops out.
Now, Mort.
Don't now, Mort, me. I've had enough of it. Now that bookcase.
Well, it's only a little gift, and it is pretty.
Well, it won't be pretty when I get through with it.
Mort, what are you going
to
do?
Just watch me. You don't even own a book to put in this. I don't like useless furniture cluttering up my house.
Mort, for heaven's sake, stop it. Are you going crazy?
No, I'm just getting some sense.
If you so much as lay a finger on that bookcase, I'll never speak to you as long as I live.
Well, stop talking then, because here it goes.
Mort, no!
There. Take a look at your fine gift from Jim now.
I hate you.
You'll get over it.
When Jim finds out if he's half the man I think he is, he'll beat you to a pulp.
Where is he?
I told you he was working on the tractor.
For your information, fine lady, I'm going out and fire him. I don't want any wife stealer working for me.
Hello, Mort. Supper almost ready?
Almost.
I won't be able to finish this tractor tonight, I'm afraid. Turned out to be more work than I thought. The wrist pins...
Never mind. Give me the wrench, Jim.
Oh, you want to take a hand at it?
No, but you won't be needing this wrench anymore.
What do you mean?
Hand it over.
All right, Mort. Anything you say. Here it is.
Thanks.
Now, what's it all about? You look like you've got something serious on your mind.
I just come out to tell you I won't be needing your services around here anymore.
Huh?
You can leave as soon as you get your things together. I'll pay it at the end of the week.
Well, you can't mean that you're firing me, Mort.
That's exactly what I mean.
But I don't get it. I've always worked hard. Why, I always thought of this place as sort of like home.
That's the trouble, Jim. You've been acting as if you owned the farm instead of me.
Well, now, look, Mort. If I said anything to make you mad, I'm sorry.
I don't mind you taking a big interest in the farm. But when you start moving in on my wife, that's where I draw the line.
Your wife?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't done anything to your wife. Why, Nellie and I, well, we get along.
That's the trouble. You get along too well. Every time I look around, you're with her, telling her stories or taking her someplace or making something for her. And I don't like it. I don't want to see any more of it. So get your clothes together and get out.
Now, look, Mort, you're talking kind of rough.
I'll talk any way I want to. It's my land, my farm, and my wife we're discussing. I'm sick and tired of having a dishonest, wife-stealing, backstabbing farmhand around here. So get out before I throw you out.
Those are big words.
You want some bigger ones?
If you think you're big enough to say them. As a matter of fact, there's a few things I can say myself. I never worked for such a miserly, selfish old coot like you before. Won't even trust a bank with your money.
That's enough out of you, Jim.
There's one more thing I always wanted to give you before I left. A punch in the nose.
Stay away from me, Jim.
Put him up, Mort. I'll give you a chance to back up them big words of yours.
All right. You asked for it.
Mort, put down that wrench.
Try and make it.
I'll take it away from you.
There. You got the wrench, all right. Jim. Jim, you'll be okay in a minute. Jim, wake up. He's dead.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Seems you've reaped a bigger harvest than you ever imagined from the little hatred you sowed. But it's not a crop to be proud of, because it's a harvest of death. After you killed Jim Hayward, you didn't know what to do with his body. You had to think. But thinking takes time. So after finding a temporary hiding place in the barn, deep in the soft, fragrant haymow, you turn back to the house for supper.
Supper ready?
All ready. Sit down. Coffee or milk?
Coffee.
Sit still. I'll get it. Here. What's the matter?
You startled me, I guess. Where's the sugar?
Where's the sugar? Land's sake, it's right in front of you. What's the matter? Can't you see?
I didn't notice it.
Well, isn't Jim coming in?
Hmm?
I said, isn't Jim coming in?
Not right away.
Well, he can't work much longer. It'll be dark in a few minutes. Potatoes will be cold if he doesn't come in soon. I knew you wouldn't fire him. You couldn't fire Jim, not after he's been with us all.
Cut it, will you?
All right, Mort. I took care of the bookcase. I finished breaking it up, and I put it in the stove. When Jim comes in, I'll say... Jim, I'll say I got some bad news for you. But I expect you can take it. Seems I fell up against the bookcase. It wasn't very big anyhow, you know, and I broke it. Mort, you're not eating a thing.
Huh? Oh, I was listening to you.
Well, it's about the first time you ever were. Jim should be in here by now. I think maybe I'll look out the window and wait for him to come in and eat his supper. Mort.
What?
It's getting dark, and I can just barely see the tractor, but I can't see hide nor hair of Jim. Can't see anything moving out there.
Sit down and eat your supper. Jim's old enough to take care of himself.
Well, I suppose he's putting the tools away. Jim's always the careful one. Mort, you're still not eating.
I'm not very hungry.
I bet Jim's got a big appetite tonight.
Will you stop talking about Jim?
Well, for heaven's sake, Mort, what's got into you? You don't have to shout like that. You're scared to live in daylights out
here. I asked you before to stop talking about Jim.
I was just trying to be sociable. If you were sitting there like a mummy, a body could go crazy for something to do.
If you want to know, Jim won't be having supper tonight, so you can stop waiting for him.
Why won't he have supper tonight?
Because I did what I said I was going to do.
You mean that you fired him?
Yes, I fired him.
Well, of all the selfish...
Nellie, I don't want to hear one word out of you about it. It's done, that's all, and there's nothing you can do to change it.
All right, Mort, if Jim's fired, he's fired, but I don't...
Shut up.
At least he can have one more meal before he goes. Can't he?
Jim's gone.
Gone already?
Yes, he's gone already. How many times do I have to say it?
Well, it seems funny he didn't say goodbye to me. He didn't even come after his clothes and things. Oh, he can't be gone yet.
I told you he was gone. Gone for good. He won't be back.
Did he ask you to send his clothes to him?
No.
Well, didn't he tell you where he was going?
Look, he just left. He didn't tell me anything.
Was he angry?
A man who gets fired isn't exactly happy.
Well, aren't you going to give him a character reference or something so that he can get a job someplace else?
Where he's going, a reference for me isn't worth a thing.
Oh, then you do know where he's going. You said before that you didn't.
I don't know. All he said was that he thought he might go north, maybe to Canada. That's all he said.
It's funny he left late in the day like this. You'd think he'd wait until morning and get a fresh start.
Can a man do what he wants with his own life without you analyzing the whole thing?
But I thought I knew Jim. I thought I could tell just what he'd do.
Well, you couldn't, so forget it.
Well, it seems to me the whole thing's all very funny. It's all very funny. Well, it's 11 o'clock, Mort. 2 hours past your bedtime. Mort.
Hmm? What?
Well, don't you feel well, Mort? That old kidney trouble isn't starting up on you again, is it? Because if it is, we still have some of the medicine left, the stuff that Dr. Kermit prescribed.
I told you I'm not sick. So stop trying to give me medicine.
All right. I was just trying to be helpful, that's all. After all, I am your wife.
Sometimes I wonder.
Well, that's a nice thing to say.
Oh, forget it.
I know what's bothering you, Mort.
You do?
Yes. You fired Jim over a petty little argument, and now you're sorry.
Am I?
But don't you worry. If I know Jim, he'll be back bright and early in the morning, just as if nothing had happened, and you'll both be plowing up land together just as happy as you please.
Got it all figured out, haven't you?
Oh, sure. Jim couldn't stay away any more than you could have him stay away. He's just like one of the family. He probably just went into town, had a few drinks to help him forget things for a while. But he'll be back as happy and friendly as ever. You wait and see.
How many times do I have to tell you Jim won't be back? He's gone for good.
Oh, not Jim.
I tell you, he's not coming back. I wish you'd stop talking about it.
All right, Mort. All I can say is wait and see for yourself.
Why don't you go to bed?
Oh, not until you do. I'm not going to let you sit here all alone making yourself unhappy over a little mistake. Why, good heavens, everyone makes a little mistake now and then. It's nothing to fret over. You know, just the same, I miss Jim already myself. Oh, it used to be comforting to watch him sit in the rocking chair, rocking back and forth, just as comfortable as you please, smoking away on his pipe.
Nellie, look. The rocking chair. It's rocking back and forth.
Just as if Jim were sitting there.
How could it? How could it rock by itself?
Well, don't get all excited, Mort. Can't you see? It's only the cat. Here. I'll chase it away if it bothers you. Cat! 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 Ah, the chair won't rock anymore.
Never liked that darn cat anyway.
Now, don't go blaming anything on the poor little cat. He probably misses Jim, too.
I don't miss Jim. Not one bit. What makes you think I do?
Well, you're sitting there like you'd lost your last friend.
What's that? Somebody's coming up the stairs. Somebody's at the front door.
Oh, sit still. I'll look. Maybe it's Jim. Oh, it's only the screen door banging. There. Heavens, you're a nervous man tonight. It was only the screen door banging. I guess you forgot to hook it. Anyway, I fixed it.
I'm going to bed.
Well, at last. Well, maybe you can relax a little bit. You're so jumpy, you act as if you'd killed somebody.
Nellie comes awfully close to the truth sometimes, doesn't she, Mort? Uncomfortably close. But never mind, she doesn't really know what happened to Jim Hayward. So you go upstairs to try to sleep and forget the whole affair, if you can. Perhaps you'll even think of something to cover up your tracks forever.
Oh, it's you, Mort. Oh, you give me a start. I just opened my eyes and thought I saw somebody standing over me. What are you sitting up in bed at this hour of the morning for?
Can't sleep.
Oh, just lay back on the pillow and relax. You'll go to sleep.
I can't. I tried. It's too hot or something.
Want me to get up and get you some coffee or something?
No, I don't want anything.
Let me put the light on. Well, no wonder you're so hot. You're fully dressed. When did you do that?
Got up and dressed about an hour ago. I think I was cold.
What in the world got into you, Mort? First you're as jumpy as a thoroughbred. Then you can't sleep. Then you turn cold. And now you're too hot. Are you sure you're not sick?
I told you there's nothing wrong with me.
Well, you surely must be hot. The sweat's pouring right off you. Now, there's no need to get so worried about Jim that you make a nervous wreck of yourself. He'll be back, I tell you.
If you mention Jim once more to me, I'll strangle you to death.
All right, Mort. I didn't mean to get you mad, but you're beginning to worry me now.
Go back to sleep.
Where are you going?
Mind your own business.
What are you lighting that lantern for?
If you got to be so nosy, I'm going out to the barn.
At this hour? Are you out of your mind?
Look, you just go back to sleep and keep your nose out of my business.
I won't mind my own business. Mort Sanders, tell me where you're going.
All right. I'm going out to the barn. I'm worried about something. One of the horses.
What's the matter with it?
I don't know, but she's been kind of sick today. I want to take a look at her.
You're up to something, Mort, and it isn't a horse. What is it?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Took you long enough.
So you're up.
Well, I couldn't lie out there in bed while you're gallivanting around the farm at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Get back to bed.
I put some coffee on. We might as well have a cup now that we're up.
I don't want any coffee.
Where's the lantern?
You always have to ask him any questions. I haven't got it with me, have I? I left it in the barn.
Mort, look out the window. That barn. The barn is on fire.
Pretty in it.
Well, do something. Don't just stand there as if you were enjoying it. The horses, let me burn alive.
There are no horses in the barn. They're all out in the pasture.
Mort Sanders, you're a murderer.
Shut up.
I won't shut up. Don't try to pull the wool over my eyes. I'm not so innocent as I look. I know why you couldn't eat and couldn't sleep. I know why you were cold 1 minute and then hot the next. You didn't know I knew, did you?
I told you to shut up.
I was looking out the window when you fired Jim. I saw you hit him with a wrench. Jim's dead and you killed him.
If you ever say that again, I'll kill you.
You don't frighten me. You hid Jim's body in the barn and now you're burning it to get rid of him.
You're as much to blame as I am. Jim had no right to be fooling around with my wife, and you had no right to let him.
At least he was human. Not a grouchy old man who wouldn't talk half the time.
Go on up to bed.
I won't. You want to know something? I was in love with Jim, and he was in love with me. We were going to run away together. And here's something else.
I don't want to hear it.
You want to hear this. Yesterday, I took all the stocks and bonds that you'd bought with the money that you've saved in 15 years, the whole $20,000 worth. You were too afraid to leave in a bank, and I gave them to Jim.
Are you telling me the truth? If you're lying, I'll kill you.
I'm not lying. Jim had the oilskin pouch with the bonds in his inside pocket when you murdered him, and now they're burning up.
I don't believe you.
You don't believe me? Look in the steel box in the desk.
You did. You did, you thief. You gave him all my bonds.
I told you I did. Won't do you any good slapping me. They're burning up right now.
I'll get him. There's still time, and then I'll get you. I'll get him. Don't worry.
Hurry, Mort! Hurry! Your bonds are burning up!
The barn. The barn will only last long enough. I'll get him. There's so much smoke and fire. I can't see. I shouldn't have poured that gasoline around. But the roof will only hold up.
once you listened to your wife, Mort. For once you took her advice and hurried into the burning barn. And to death. Of course, the flames lighted the night sky and brought a crowd of neighbors, but there wasn't much they could do. They stand outside the house, watching the last glowing embers, talking in hushed tones. But you can't hear them, can you, Mort?
It's awful. Awful. Both of them at once this way.
Constable figures Mort must have gone in to try to save Jim. Jim was almost like one in the family, you know.
Yes. What about Nellie? Is she all right?
She's just sitting in there in the rocking chair by the window. Stunned, I guess.
Oh, poor soul. I'd best go in and see if I can comfort her. Nellie.
Oh, Miss Thompson.
I've come to see if there's anything I can do, dear.
No. It's all done now.
Now try to be brave, dear. I know it's a shock, but we've got to be practical. The men folks will build you a new barn, and we'll all see that you're took care of.
I'll manage somehow.
Why, of course you will. Is there something I could get you? Some hot tea, maybe?
No, thank you, Miss Thompson. I'd just like to sit here a while.
Well, of course, I understand. We're all so sorry about Mort and Jim, too. But everything will be all right. You just keep telling yourself that. Everything will be all right.
Yes, Mort. They're all so sorry about you, and Jim, too. And Nellie, poor Nellie, just sits there sniffling and rocking through the night in Jim's favorite rocking chair, through the night until dawn. Then, when the last neighbor is gone, she stands up, stares out the window for a moment toward the blackened ashes, walks to the pantry shelf, takes down the coffee can and lifts the lid. Now, what do you think, Mort? Inside, wrapped in an old piece of oilskin, are $20,000 in stocks and bonds. Now, here's a surprise for you, Nellie. Those securities were not worth the paper they're written on. Mort wasn't a very smart investor.
Next Monday at 9 o'clock, the Whistler will bring you another strange tale. The Whistler is broadcast for your entertainment by the marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories, and by your neighborhood Signal dealer. This program, directed by George W. Allen, with tonight's story by John Hayes, music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From November of 1945, it's been Bill Forman starring in The Whistler with The Harvest of Death. In a moment, we'll head out west for some adventure with Jimmy Stewart starring in The Six Shooter as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Six Shooter brought Jimmy Stewart to the NBC microphones on September 20th of 1953 in a fine series of folksy Western adventures. Stewart was in fact never better on the air than this drama of Britt Ponsett, frontier drifter created by Frank Burt. Ponsett was a wanderer, an easygoing gentleman, and when he had to be, a gunfighter. Stewart was right in character as the slow-talking maverick who usually blundered into other people's troubles and sometimes shot his way out. His experiences were broad, but The Six Shooter leaned more toward comedy than other shows of its kind. Unfortunately, the program came too late and lasted only one season. It was a transcribed show, sustained by NBC and directed by Jack Johnstone. Basil Adlam provided the music while Frank Burt wrote scripts and Hal Gibney announced. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Jimmy Stewart, starring in The Six Shooter with Apron Face Sorrell from 1953. another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western Territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
The 2 p.m. from Chicago wasn't more than, about 45 minutes late. That was practically a record for this time of year, what with the spring floods and all. Of course, later on in the summer, when things had dried up, it was more than likely the train had hit Rustville right on schedule. Once in a while, anyway. I climbed down from the buckboard Paul Poindexter had lent me and walked over to the platform. I guess I'd be able to recognize Clay Fenton, even though I'd never seen him before. It stood to reason that there wouldn't be more than one 16-year-old boy getting off at Rustville Station, and Clay's mother had sent along a pretty complete description. He 5'7", thin, gangly, sandy hair, and a V-shaped scar on his forehead. The train had stopped now, and the conductor lowered some iron steps. The first person to step down was a drummer holding a big tapestry valise crammed full of samples. Behind him, there were two ladies. They didn't have any suitcases, just boxes, so I figured they'd only been as far as Fort Davidson on a shopping spree. After them, there didn't seem to be anybody else at all. Well, now I'm sure that letter had said Clay would be arriving on the 22nd. Mister.
Yep?
This is the Tuesday train, isn't it?
What day did you think it was?
Oh, I know it's Tuesday, but sometimes, I was wondering if this could be Monday's train. You're not a day late, are you?
Well, of course we're not a day late. We're right on time, practically.
Well, I was supposed to meet a young fellow traveling with you, about 16.
Mr. Ponsett?
Clay?
Yes, sir.
No, I didn't see you get off.
I was riding in the last car. It took me a couple of minutes to get my things together.
This is the fellow you were looking for, mister?
That's right. Thanks very much.
Whoop!
Wow, buckboard's right over here, Clay. Here, let me give you a hand of that suitcase.
Oh, it's not very heavy. I can manage.
Have a good trip.
Yes, sir. Just fine.
Here, you get. Put your bag right behind the seat here.
Okay.
You want to drive?
Huh?
Well, you can handle a buckboard, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah, well, Annie's real gentle. No sense being scared of her.
I'm not scared, Mr. Ponsett.
All right.
I'm not scared of anything.
All right, Clay.
It's just that I don't know the way to the ranch, so maybe you'd better...
Yeah. I didn't think of that. Well, come on, hop aboard. All right, you all settled?
Yes, sir.
All right, Annie, come on. Let's go. Come on, Annie. That's your first trip west, isn't it, Clay?
That's right.
Yeah, come on, Annie. Come on now. You know, you must have done some pretty smooth talking to persuade your ma to let you come out here all by yourself.
My coming was her idea, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, I see.
She thought, since I don't have any brothers and we've always lived in town, she thought maybe it would do me good to spend a summer on a ranch.
I see.
Of course, I was all for it, too.
You were?
Oh, sure. Especially when I found out I was going to be staying with you. The other fellas, they sure were jealous when I told them I was going to be living with a six-shooter.
We all pick up nicknames out here, Clay. Something to answer to besides your own handle. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know.
In your case, it means something,
all right. No.
Mom told me not to expect you to talk very much. especially about yourself. Yeah, I guess she knows you pretty well, Mr. Ponsett.
Now, we used to be real good friends, your ma and pa and me. That was when they lived up in Dakota, before you were born.
Yes, sir.
Come to think of it, you look like your pa.
Well, that's what people say, but I don't remember him. Funny, the only thing I can remember is sitting on his lap and playing with his watch chain. I remember that watch chain just as clear as day, but I just can't remember him. Wonder why that is.
Oh, some things just stick with a person, I guess.
Yeah. Is it a big ranch, Mr. Ponsett, where we're going?
No, it's not really. Mr. Poindexter, he's the owner. Oh, he's got 500 head of cattle and a couple thousand acres, that's all.
It sounds pretty big to me.
That's all what you're used to, I reckon.
Yes, sir. It sure was nice of Mr. Poindexter to let me move in with you.
Oh, he was real pleased at the prospect of having an extra hand for the summer. There sure has been more than enough work for the three of us already.
You mean there's only three people on the ranch?
Well, there's four now, counting you.
Oh, I thought there'd be a whole lot more than that. I thought there'd be 10 or 15 cowboys and a cook and some men to look after the horses and...
Well, Saul Poindexter, he does the cooking himself, and Jeff takes care of the horses.
Jeff?
That's Mr. Poindexter's son, yeah. He must be about your age, Clay. Maybe a year or two older. Not as tall, though.
Oh.
Jeff will show you the ropes. He knows all about ranching.
Oh?
Oh, I expect there's plenty of things you can show him, too, about city life.
Yes, sir. I expect so.
Yeah, you'll probably have a real good time getting acquainted. Well, here's where we turn off. Easy on it. Easy on it. Easy on it.
Oh, boy. Oh,
boy. Well, I didn't expect you back so soon, Brett.
Yeah. Train was earlier than usual. Clay, this is Mr. Poindexter here.
How do you do, sir?
Pleased to meet you, son. Well, come on. Jump down here so I can get a look at you.
Yes, sir.
Let's see here now. Not much meat on your bones, but we'll soon take care of that.
That's the bunkhouse over there, Clay. You can start getting settled while I unhitch Annie here.
All right, Mr. Ponsett.
No. Hold on a minute, Britt.
What?
Well, there's no reason why Clay can't unhitch the buckboard. This is as good a time as any for him to start learning his chores.
Oh, whatever you say, Saul. Think you can manage Clay?
I guess so.
Jeff will give you a hand. Jeff! Jeff! Where in thunder are you?
In the barn, Paul!
Well, get out here!
That driver you busted yesterday.
I don't care what you're doing. I think it out here. You think I'm hollering just to exercise my lungs?
Okay, keep your shirt on.
Fine way for a son to talk to his father. Can't you see that you don't follow his example, Clay?
No, sir, I won't.
Yeah, well, what's all the ruckus about? Oh, hi, Britt.
Jeff?
Yeah, it's Clay Fenton, Jeff.
Howdy. Hello.
I want you to help Clay unhitch the buckboard.
In those duds?
I've got some other clothes in my suitcase.
Like mine?
Well, not exactly.
Appears like we'll have to take Clay into town and fix him up with some Levi's and boots.
Yeah, that was better.
Well, if you don't mind getting them fancy pants all messed up.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Come on in.
Clay, I'll put your suitcase in the bunkhouse.
Thanks, Mr. Ponsett.
Seems like kind of the quiet type, right?
Well, it's all pretty new to him, so...
Yeah, well, he'll get used to it. Jeff will see to that.
Yeah, yes, he will.
Well, I better start fixing supper. I thought maybe we'd have Johnny Cake tonight. How's that sound to you?
Sounds fine, Saul. Well, I took Clay's things into the bunkhouse and emptied out part of a wooden footlocker so he'd have some storage space. Saul and Jeff lived up in the main house. There was room up there for me, too, but I always felt more comfortable in the bunkhouse. And besides the way Saul snored, holy smokes. You could hear it all the way down here when the wind was right. I thought about unpacking Clay's suitcase, but then I decided maybe he'd rather do it himself. Now, Saul was right. Clay sure was a quiet type. A lot more like his mother and his father. Ted Fenton had been about as lively as they come. He's always laughing and cracking jokes.
I never could figure out why he sold that general store and moved back east, but I suppose he had his reasons. Funny how a boy can grow up and be so different from his pa. A couple minutes later, I heard Jeff shout about something.
All right, then prove it. Prove that he ain't no dude.
All right, I will.
You're scared to ride.
I couldn't quite make out what Clay called back, but I sure could tell they weren't exactly hitting it off. Well, I didn't actually blame Jeff for not taking the Clay. Of course, in the city, it had been Jeff who had been the misfit, but we weren't in the city now. Anyhow, I waited for Clay to come back into the bunkhouse, and when he didn't show up, I walked outside to see what had happened to him. He wasn't in sight, but there was something going on out in the corral behind the barn.
Riding, cowboy!
I got there just in time to see the apron-faced sorrel give a buck that sent young Clay flying clear over the corral fence. For a second, he didn't get up, either.
Rich, you see that?
Clay? Hey, you all right?
Yeah, I guess so. Sure he's all right.
Well, what the Sam hell are you trying to do?
He said I was a dude, that I couldn't stay in the saddle.
You put him up to riding that sorrel, Jeff?
Nope, I gave him his pick of the ponies.
Now, you know that sorrel's a high binder. You should have warned him.
It ain't my fault if he can't tell a spooky horse when he sees one. It was his pick.
Now, here, Clay, you think you can stand up?
Yes, sir, I think so.
Let's see. Yeah, well, doesn't seem to be anything broken.
I guess I better change my trousers. They're all ripped up. You got nobody but yourself to blame, kid. I told you didn't know the first thing about riding a pony. You should have fessed up to it instead of making such a fool of yourself.
I'll show you, Jeff. I'll show you I can ride. And I'll ride that sorrel, too. Just you wait and see.
You'd almost think he meant it, wouldn't you, Britt?
He means it.
City dude. He don't even know which side to mount.
Yeah. But that won't keep him from trying the sorrel again.
Well, if he does, he'll just get himself tossed off.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now, Act Two of the six-shooter. Starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, Clay changed his clothes. We all had supper. Nobody said much while we were eating, and nobody mentioned the sorrel again. I figured it was just as well to let the subject drop for time being. And as soon as the dishes were washed, Clay and I headed for the bunkhouse. It was only 7:30, and that was half an hour before my usual bedtime, but Clay seemed pretty tired, so we turned in. I guess I must have been kind of tired myself, huh? Anyway, the first thing I knew, I dropped off. It was getting on toward dawn when I... one of the horses down the corral was sure upset about something. I turned over and I saw that Clay's bunk was empty. Clothes were gone, too. For a second, I wondered if he'd run off, maybe he tried to go home. Then I heard him coming into the bunkhouse. His face was all wet and shiny, like he'd been working up a sweat, and there were some dark stains on his pants and shirt. And he undressed and he put the clothes he'd been wearing in his suitcase. Then he crawled under the blanket on his cot and he pretended to go back to sleep. He hadn't noticed that I was awake, and I didn't see any reason for starting a conversation at 4:00 in the morning, so I... Besides, whatever he'd been up to, probably wasn't any of my business anyway.
It must have been a good hour later. I woke up again. I went, doused my face in a bowl of cold water, washed the sleep away. Clay drug himself out of bed and started to put on some trousers. I noticed they weren't the same ones he'd worn when he went out during the night. I didn't get a chance to say anything about it. Just then, Saul Poindexter came charging into the bunkhouse like a bull after a red shirt. Ah, morning, Saul.
Hey. Clay, I want to talk to you.
Why, yes, sir.
What's the matter, Saul?
I just been down to the corral. That apron-faced sorrel has been whipped half to death.
What?
His flanks are cut to shreds. So wonder he can even stand up.
Well, now, maybe he got caught in some barbed wire.
I found the bull whip beside the fence. It's caked up with blood.
Well, do you know anything about this, Clay?
No. No, sir, not a thing.
You're lying, you little...
No, Saul.
Jeff told me about how the sorrel threw Clay yesterday. You knew about it, Rick. You were there.
Yeah, I was there.
Well?
I didn't do it, Mr. Ponset.
If you didn't, who did? Me or Jeff or Britt?
I don't know.
Well, maybe if you were whipped away that pony was, maybe then you'd tell the truth, you little...
Now, easy, Saul. Easy now.
Get him out of here, Britt. Send him back home. Send him anywhere. But get him off my ranch.
You didn't whip that pony, Clay?
I told you I didn't.
Yeah, that's what you told me.
Why don't you believe me then? Just because I'm a stranger, because I'm different from the rest of you, why do you have to pick on me?
Well, there's one way to find out whether you're telling the truth or not.
What do you mean?
You said you'd ride that sorrel again. You said you'd show Jeff that you could ride him, huh?
No, I would, too, if they'd let me.
Well, I'll let you.
Huh?
But I sure hope for your sake you didn't whip that horse last night.
What difference would it make?
Well, horses are pretty smart animals. And when somebody's mean to them, they don't forget it. And they can be mean, too. That sorrel especially.
Oh?
Yeah. The person who beat him ever tried to climb on that pony's back, well... But as long as you weren't the one, well, you haven't got anything to worry about, have you? Come on, now. Let's go out to the corral, huh? I told Jeff to saddle up the sorrel and bring him into the yard, and Clay stood beside me, his eyes pushed wide open, staring at that stable door. He didn't move a muscle until Jeff led the pony toward us. I could see the cuts on the animal's flanks, and he walked with a sore, unsteady gait. About 6 feet away, he stopped and flared his nostrils. A little shiver jarred Clay's body. Then the sorrel let out a snort and reared. Clay caught his breath, and the pony sprang forward, almost tearing the reins out of Jeff's hands.
No!
Clay darted out of the way as fast as his legs could carry him. He ducked under the fence and kept running.
Clay, you satisfied, Britt? You believe he done it?
Well, I was pretty certain of it all along, so...
Well, then why'd we have to go through all this rigmarole?
At least he won't have any reason to go on lying from now on. That's something. I sure wish I could figure out what got into him last night.
He's mean. That's what got into him. Mean, clean through.
Well, kids aren't usually mean to animals, so...
Your friend Clay Fenton is. Take another look at my pony there, if there's any doubt in your mind.
Well, we had breakfast, Saul and Jeff and me. Then we did the morning chores. I hoped that Clay would come back of his own accord and face up to what he'd done, but by 10 o'clock, it looked like somebody'd have to go after him, so I saddled up Scar and started off. It wasn't very hard to follow Clay's tracks across the prairie, and about 30 minutes later, I caught up with him. He'd stopped to rest in the shade of a chalk boulder, and he'd been too tired to stay awake. Whoa, Scar. Whoa. Oh, boy. Easy. Clay? Come on, Clay.
Huh?
All right. Ready to get back to the ranch?
I can't.
Well, you'll have to come back sooner or later, even if you don't stay, even if it's just to get your things.
They know it was me that whipped that pony, don't they? When I ran off, that cinched it.
Yeah, that cinched it.
I had to whip him, Mr. Ponson. I had to.
You did, huh?
I didn't know it would make him meaner. I thought if I beat him good, he'd be scared of me afterwards, and he'd let me ride him. I thought he'd be scared of me the way I was scared of him.
You don't know much about horses, do you, son?
I know plenty. That's why I hate him.
Oh?
It was a horse that killed my pa.
Oh, I see.
We were visiting my Uncle Jack out in the country, and Pa was taking me for a horseback ride. I wasn't more than 3 years old, but he wanted me to get used to riding. And the horse threw us. Mom was watching from the front porch. She let out a scream. I told you it was funny what you remember from the time when you were a kid.
Yeah?
Well, I remember hearing Mom scream. I guess maybe it was the first time I ever heard her sound frightened. I guess that's why I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, afterwards, after that day, I had this mark on my forehead. I must have hit against a rock. And Pa, well, Pa was dead. I've been scared of horses ever since. I've always hated them.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of times folks hate what they're afraid of.
That's why Mom made me come out to this ranch. I didn't want to, but she made me. She said I had to get a hold of myself and start acting like a man. And I tried, Mr. Ponsett. I tried to ride that sorrel yesterday. You know I tried.
Yeah?
And when
yeah.
I couldn't hang on, well, I figured if I showed him who was boss, I figured then maybe he wouldn't throw me again.
Now, whipping that pony the way you did, you could have killed him, Clay.
Well, what's the difference? He's just a horse, ain't he?
Uh-huh. Well, if you can't see where it was wrong, there's no point in me standing here jawing about it. So let's just... Clay...
Yes, sir.
No, don't move. No matter what happens, just don't move.
What?
Now do what I say. Just keep sitting the way you are.
What's the matter?
There's a rattlesnake edging towards your belly. Now, go on. Go on. Keep on talking. Just keep on talking like nothing's the matter. Don't try to look at him. Just go on talking.
I can't.
No, there's no reason to get scared yet now. He may shove off by. We buy you and never know. Should you keep on talking? Keep on talking now.
I can feel him on my leg.
Oh, you're imagining that, Clay. He's not even touching you.
Can't you kill him, Mr. Ponson?
If he starts to strike, maybe I can get off a shot. But he isn't striking yet. Now, sometimes rattlers go on about their business and don't strike. Now, so you just keep sitting there. Just keep sitting there and keep talking like everything was fine. Go on, son. Now, go on. Talk. Go on. Clay did his best, but his voice sure didn't sound very strong or confident. Not that I blamed him. He was in a tough spot. And the worst of it was I just couldn't risk shooting. The snake was right between us. As long as he stayed there firing at me, I'd be sure to get a bullet into Clay. The rattler would just move off a foot or so, maybe. He was getting nervous now. The tip of his tail jiggled the rattles back and forth. I inched my gun out of the holster, but I still couldn't fire. And the snake started to coil, and the rattle sounded even louder. And his head swung up, and his beady eyes seemed to pop out, and he was less than a foot away from Clay's arm, and he was ready to strike if Clay had just so much as twitched. For a second, that rattler just hung in midair. And then he twisted, and he whipped toward Scar. And Scar reared, got out of the way. I could get off a shot now, but I didn't have to. Scar's hooves were saving me the trouble. They came down again and again and again until the rattler's body was half buried in the ground. And then Scar backed off and the snake gave a flip of his tail, but the rattlers were broken. And there wasn't any sound. All right, Clay. Let's go.
Mr. Ponsett?
Yeah?
Why'd he do it?
What?
Your horse. Why'd he save my life?
I guess he just doesn't like rattlesnakes, that's all.
The snake wasn't bothering him. He was out of the way. What's his name, Mr. Ponsett?
Scar.
Scar?
That's right.
That's funny. I guess if I was a horse, that'd be my name.
Well,
I'd like to ask you a favor, Mr. Ponsett.
Go ahead.
Do you think that sometime, if I stay on here this summer, I mean, well, sometime could I ride him?
Well, if we're going to get back in time for dinner, we're going to both have to ride him right now. Here, come on, I'll hoist you up. Come on, come on. It wasn't easy for Clay. The next few weeks, especially since Saul Poindexter said if Clay was going to stay on, he'd have to look after that sorrel. Pretty smart old man, Saul. Took time, lots of time. Lots of time before that pony even let Clay come near him. But before long, the two of them were galloping all over the ranch from early morning to past supper. I guess maybe that apron-faced Saul forgot the whipping Clay had given him. But I don't think Clay forgot it.
Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. By the way, you'll be interested in knowing that the six-shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Services. This is John Wall speaking.
From 1953, it's been Jimmy Stewart starring in The Six-Shooter. Well, that's all we have time for today, but join us again next week for more exciting adventure from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, thanks for listening, and so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio,
the preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.